Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast.
First thing you may be wondering is, what is this podcast all about? My name is Dan Perry. I'm an American from the state of Wisconsin. I've spent much of my adult life traveling, and currently I live in Beijing, China. I just got back from a 3-month trip, mainly to Australia, but also Cambodia and Vietnam. And during that trip, I met a lot of really interesting people. We'd have conversations about the world, about life, about travel. And I kept coming out of those conversations thinking, I wish I had recorded that, because a lot of other people would be interested in hearing it. Well, now I've got my chance. This podcast is about travel. I'll interview interesting characters to get their stories, learn how they travel, what motivates them, and hopefully in the process, I'll motivate you as well. When I was getting started in my international travels, there weren't a lot of resources online to help me. Nowadays, there's plenty of information out there about things like what cities to visit, where to sleep, where to eat, how to get around. I'm not going to spend much time talking about that stuff. But what this podcast is going to give you is motivation. You're going to learn that there's no right or wrong way to travel. You can do whatever you want on your trip. So what's stopping you? I'm always looking for new guests. So if you're in the middle of a big trip or just got home, or maybe if you know someone who would like to share their story, then go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com, that's the number 1000daysbetween.com, and send me an email. My very first guest on this podcast is a special one. Craig Martin is from Australia, and we met way back in 2005 in South America. Our meeting was fortuitous, because soon after we met, we got the opportunity to travel to Antarctica. Later, we met up again and spent about 6 months traveling around South America together, so we know each other quite well. During my recent trip to Australia, I got the chance to catch up with Craig on his family's farm. Craig uses the word mosaic to discuss his travel history, and this is a good description of our talk as well. We jump around a lot, which is one of the issues with interviewing a friend. On top of that, I was a bit nervous about the sound quality, this being my first time using my new voice recorder, but I think the interview turned out quite well. That said, I'll give you a little bit of info about Craig before we begin. When Craig was a teenager, he decided to make his life goal to travel for 3 years on each continent. He started in his native Australia, spending about 5 years traveling around the country while working as a tour guide. Then in the late 90s, he took off on his first big trip and spent 3 years traveling in Asia, including a year just in India. Then he came home, he went back to work, and he saved his money. He took off again for 3 years in South America and Antarctica, which, as I mentioned, is where we met. After that trip, he went home, worked again for a few more years. Then he spent 3 years bicycling around Europe, and he came home from that trip in 2014. Craig is probably the most well-traveled person I know, at least when you count depth. I've met a few people who have been to more countries than him. But he doesn't just go somewhere for a week. He spends a long time getting to know everywhere he goes. Next, he'll spend 3 years traveling in the Caribbean and North America, starting in the fall of 2015. In this interview, Craig talks a lot about his passions of surfing and trekking. We also discuss technology and the role that changing technology plays in his life. Finally, we talk about travel as an education. And really, what better way is there to learn about the world than to go out there and see it? So, without further ado, we'll listen to Craig Martin, a good friend and an inspiring traveler.
So, here we are in central Victoria, Australia, and we're hanging out in the Pyrenees Mountains near a mountain called Mount Cole, and this is right on near Craig's uncle's property.
And it's a beautiful sunny day, and I thought we'd talk a little bit about travel with Mr. Craig Martin, legendary traveler. Welcome, Craig. Glad to have you here.
Well, thanks very much, Dan. It's very nice to be here.
Yeah, and we go a long way back. We met 9 years ago or so in South America and traveled for quite a long time together, and now I'm back in Australia visiting. It's been an amazing time here.
Yeah, well, welcome, Dan. It's great to have you here, and it's been nice to be able to share some new experiences after our legendary earlier ones.
Yeah, wow, we had some good times going back. Yeah. So, your first big trip of your life, how old were you when you did that, you started?
Yeah, well, I set off to travel around the continent of Australia, and it was back in 92, so I was about 24 years old.
24?
Yep, and I'm nearly double that now.
Wow, 46 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes by fast, doesn't it?
Oh, it slides on by. If you can fill it up with the, you know, fill it with lots of experiences, it's more likely to, I think.
Wow. So you traveled all around Australia. Is that was before you ever left the country?
That's right. Yep. I pretty much traveled the length and breadth of the continent, and took me several years.
Yeah.
And that was all, you know, as a kid, I wanted to see if I could see all the continents of the world, and I thought, well, if I really do like it, I'll travel my own first and see how that goes. So,
yeah. Cool. That's really unusual. I mean, I find that most people tend to go far away. Like, I even did that. I went really far, traveled all over South America, and then came home and went, whoa, I don't even really know my own state very well. This is crazy. I gotta get out there in my own area. But you did it right. And, well, maybe not right, but you did it differently.
Yeah. I mean, I was like a working travel holiday, and had the chance to work in all over the country as a tour guide in a lot of really remote areas. So I was exploring and working at the same time.
Okay.
Some work and some my own travels, and it was a work travel trip. So it was all, it's Australia. It's a great country, and if you like landscapes, and I was always in love with my country ever since I was a little kid, the bush. So I didn't see it as anything unusual to me. There's plenty of people who do travel around the country, but yeah, they're generally a bit older when they do it or retire.
Yeah, that tends to be it. Oh, it's cool that you did it while you were young, and it seems like you just took what you just love to do and integrated that within your job, and then just went and did it and made some money in the process.
So. Yeah, yep. Well, the whole trip actually took about 5 years, so if you take away the work aspect, it was probably more like 2.5, and that's a long time. You can have a really good look around, the four-wheel drive with the boats, and then when I got up to the north of the continent, I flew over and had a look at bits of Southeast Asia, and I was already like 27 by the first time I went abroad, which you could look at as being pretty old, and I really loved those 3 months that I spent over there, and then I finally finished off my own travels in Australia, and that's when I headed off to the next continent, which was Asia.
Cool. So, well, before we move to Asia, what parts of Australia do you like the best, or what area do you like? What kind of stuff do you like to do in that area? Why do you like it?
Yeah, well, I really couldn't say I like one area more than the other.
Oh, okay.
There's a really beautiful places. The East Coast is more populated because it's more lush and green, but there's some wonderful places all up and down the entire East Coast of Australia. The inner area, what they call Central Australia, and the outback, like the desert, semi-desert areas, the arid regions. You know, I fell in love with that place and lived in Central Australia and tour guided in four-wheel drives for several years, and top end of the Northern Territory with Kakadu, and then North Queensland with its rainforest and incredible desert coastline of Western Australia and South Australia. And the southwest is green again with huge forests in the south of Perth. And I spent really big slabs of time in all those places and love them equally as much as anywhere. I'd have to say it's, and I always feel home under a gum tree wherever I am. And my own region on the Great Ocean Road in southern Victoria, I just happen to love that. Would have spent more time there because it's my home, but It also has world-class waves and...
Oh, look, big into surfing.
Like the surfing, Dan. Like the surfing and, yep, then I got to see the family.
Sounds like that integrates with your lifestyle quite well. And Tasmania too, is that right?
And also Tasmania, yep.
Wow, don't forget Tasmania. I've learned that they kind of feel bad. They get left out a lot and they don't like it so much.
No, poor old things down there.
Don't forget, guys, it's a state of Australia and it's beautiful. You should get there. So I guess next thing I was wondering then, moving to Asia, you got a little taste of it by going to Southeast Asia for 3 months. Now, is that where you started to get this, like, let's go venture abroad kind of travel bug, or did that come sooner?
No, I always, just about a 15-year-old, I formulated some ideas, spinning my plastic globe that I have on my desk for years as a kid, and I pretty much finalized. I can even remember now looking at spinning the globe around and looking how big Siberia was and looking how big Australia was, and I thought, well, yeah, that's what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to see if I can wander around the earth and do it in fun ways and adventurous ways using different modes of transport. I'll set off and do it around Australia first, and I'll just take it as it comes, whatever I can do in the next continent.
Wow.
So no, I didn't approach with any differently than when I approached traveling in Australia.
Well, so you started, you knew you wanted to travel the world at 15, yeah, but you didn't even leave the country till you were 27. I mean, that's a long stretch of knowing what you want to do, but not, I don't want to say not doing it. You were still doing it in Australia, but not actually going far. So yeah. It kind of just sounds to me like you're willing to take your time and do things thoroughly and slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you could say that. You know, Australia is a big country. It's 5% of the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess I set off when I was around 24. I had to, you know, save a bit of money to get a vehicle and, you know, research my trip and, you know, understand a little bit about what I was going to do there. So, yeah, I guess I could have probably set off a couple of years earlier than that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was enjoying my life, my early 20s and my late teen years, living on the coast in southern Victoria, and really did a lot of surfing. But, you know, I started doing a lot of hikes in those early 20s and spending a lot of time out by myself and learning different techniques of the great outdoors. So those years were really, I guess, cutting my teeth in outdoor adventure from, you know, trekking. I did a bit of climbing and kayaking and canoeing and learning, you know, how to drive a four-wheel drive, and so I don't think any of it was really, I wasn't idle, I was out doing things, and I was probably getting in readiness for heading off
for bigger things to come.
So
when you were a little older, then you took off for Asia then again, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And did you set off to do a certain length of time right away?
Yep, 3 years. The idea ever since I was 15 was to spend 3 years in every continent traveling them.
3 years on each continent.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I reckon that is a good period of time to be able to explore a continent. These are only ideas when I was 15 years old, but, you know, now it's many years later and it seemed to be fairly accurate.
Wow, it's incredible that you had that vision at such a young age. I mean, I know when I was 15, I had no idea of what I wanted to do, and it's really interesting to hear that you had such a solid view even at that age. And you've been living it too. So you saved some money, took off for Asia. Where'd you go? Where'd you start?
Oh, well, Southeast Asia, Indonesia, Philippines, and up through Hong Kong, up northeastern Japan and China and Tibet, and then right across to the edge of Central Asia, around through the Taklamakan and down into the Himalaya, and all the way down through to the Indian subcontinent, and as far west was Afghanistan, and then right through to back through India, Sri Lanka, Maldives, and then back to Southeastern Asia. Wow. So it was fairly comprehensive.
Wow, and that's your trip, huh? That's 3 years condensed into like one sentence. That's amazing. What were some of the highlights? I mean,
Probably a year of it was trekking in the Himalaya across all the Himalayan countries from Pakistan and India, Nepal, into Bhutan, and Tibet. And yeah, the roof of the world, Tibet, the blue sky and the people. But I travel for landscapes, and if I can enjoy the people along the way, I see that as a bonus.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so Tibet and Nepal have both, huh?
Yes, they do. Those Himalayan countries, they do. And India is fascinating. I spent a year of those 3 years just in India.
Wow.
It's still one of the biggest countries in the world. It's more than a billion people. It went over a billion in number when I was there. I found that, and still do find it, one of the most fascinating, interesting countries that you can travel. And that was really the highlight of the trip. It's pretty much got everything that you got on offer as a tourist or an adventurer or traveler or however you'd like to define yourself.
Yeah, sounds like you really love India. But this was all pre-internet, right? Or before at least these countries had much internet? Or?
Yeah, India was on the verge of it. You know, I was using the internet when I was in India, but when I started on that trip the first year, I'd never really used it. So I started to use it then. That was 19, around 2000 when I started using it.
Oh, okay. Okay, so not right away when the internet first started, but before it reached the whole world, let's say. I mean, that really just, to me, seems like that's been a huge game changer in travel, that it's just so much, I think, just so much easier now to look things up, to keep in touch with people on the road. When I was traveling in South America, we emailed each other, and then now it's even easier with Facebook and social networking. Would you agree, or do you use that kind of stuff today?
That's a good question, Dan, and as you know, I have been somewhat reticent in my usage of technologies, but actually you were one of the people that got me involved into one of the great travel websites that there is Couchsurfing, which is hospitality website, and I always appreciate that. But yeah, I do use it, and I use it a lot, and I use it to my much to my benefit. And as I've travelled further and further, and technology's continued now, the usage of smartphones, it's really for navigation. Like, I just did a world trip on a bicycle. It was a fantastic asset, saved me a lot of time, and it's really been great. But you know, there's still a lot of trips that you can do, which they're not going to help you much if you're going down big rivers, for example, out in the middle of, you know, really wilderness areas. You can forget that type of thing. And I'll always make sure that although I use these technologies, I still think that I can strip myself away from those and still have a great time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think it's, personally, I think it's important if you're going anywhere in the wilderness to know how to read a map and contour lines, things like that, charts on seas. It's all important, but it seems like overall, wow, the internet's really made things easier. It's connected the world. This website you mentioned, Couchsurfing, for people who don't know, it's a hospitality website where you can stay at people's houses. You can meet the locals instead of staying in a hotel or a hostel. And it's good to mix it up. I think Couchsurfing has its benefits and its downsides, but overall it's been wonderful for me, and I'm sure for you too, Craig. And definitely one of the top highlights of being online when you travel, I think.
Absolutely. One of the great highlights of my last trip that I did was Couchsurfing. You know, it adds a great cultural dimension to a trip, and I've always had a great time whilst traveling. Although there are ups and downs with illnesses and just the human experience that we all go through in our lifetime, is ups and downs. But Couchsurfing has even enhanced my travel experience greatly. And I know when I set off my next trip, what a great time I'll have. I know the Couchsurfing aspect will be a bonus. In fact, I could just do Couchsurfing, travel the world for the rest of my life, just do Couchsurfing. That would probably be interesting enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I find after it takes a while to find a host sometimes. So I find eventually I'm spending all my time just looking for a host. But yeah, I mean, and I kind of just need some time on my own sometimes. But you think you could do the whole thing just Couchsurfing?
Well,
that'd be interesting anyway.
Yeah,
every single night.
That would be interesting. Yeah, but like recent times I've been doing cycle touring. So cycle touring, you can do your couch surfing in your town that you want to visit, and then on the route to get there, you travel between cities, and I'm into landscape, so I'm really out there for that. But you know, I use the city, many scenic, having just recently visited Europe, for example. As much of Europe is actually the cultural aspect and the cities as it is out in the nature. Whereas here in Australia, for example, couch surfing, it can be something really good and convenient, but you wouldn't expect to do it as much if you're actually doing a continental trip.
Yeah, that's true. It's not that useful in the middle of nowhere, I guess.
No.
Unless you find that rare ranch or something where someone takes people in, and those can be really cool places. But yeah, and I should just mention, I'm not affiliated with Couchsurfing or anything like that. I'm just a fan.
Yeah, we both are.
Yeah, we both are. Yeah, so let's move on. You did this massive trip through Europe. I mean, through Asia. We could spend hours talking about it, but we don't have that much time. You came home from that, and did you just settle right in and get a job right away, or what'd you do?
Yeah, pretty much. That was a big trip. People sometimes ask, how do you go after spending a few years on the road? And I guess some people, 3 months on the road is a long time, or 6 months, and they come home and they need some adjustment to 3 years. And really, no adjustment at all, because I'd travelled a lot before that in my own country, and I'd travelled, you know, a year or a year or two without working and enjoyed it thoroughly. And then when I went back to work when I was in Australia, I always chose a different region to work in as a tour guide, and so I would always see that as a new chapter in my life, and also a new type of exploration and adventure. So I wasn't as if I was going back to doing something that, you know, that I'd done exactly before, and maybe there's some mundane aspects of it that I wasn't looking forward to. I always went back to a new place to work, and so that's one of the ways that I've been able to, I think, keep myself pretty fresh and motivated to travel on the next leg, is because I'm enjoying myself and learning new things, because I'm tour guiding and working in a different region in Australia. So it's not like I'm going back, and that's when you are experienced as a tour guide, you can pretty much pick up work anywhere you want to. So it's not like I'm going back and doing something that, you know, I would consider mundane. It's not like that.
Yeah, a lot of people would have like some boring job that they hate, or just maybe not hate, that's maybe too strong, but just they're just kind of getting by.
Yeah.
Then they go traveling somewhere, and then they kind of regret, like when they come back home, or they're just not looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, that's right. But they're going, and they're also going from being on the road to not being on the road. And I'm with my job, I'm on the road all the time.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's I mean,
it's just your life.
It might be the same road sometimes, but still on the road. And trying to find new places in the continent to work and live. It's been great.
Wow. Well, so how long were you back home for then after your Asia trip?
A couple of years.
That was
3 years in Asia, and a couple of years back home, tour guiding in different areas. A couple of stints down in Tasmania.
Okay.
And
anywhere else?
And one back in the outback in Central Australia, and a different trip between Alice Springs and Darwin through the sandy deserts of the arid regions of South Australia.
Wow. So really all over. I mean, these are, for those of you who don't know the terrain of Australia, it's a massive country, and Tasmania is absolutely nothing like Darwin. They're completely different. So it's pretty amazing. You've gotten to know these places well enough to run tours out of all of them. But anyway, then you did that for a few years, save a bunch of money, and, or were you broke when you came home from Asia? I mean,
pretty much.
Yeah.
That didn't matter.
Doesn't bother you so much.
Nah, really didn't spend. Like, I probably spent about $10,000 a year, and that's about the same as what I've spent on all my trips.
Wow, that's really, really low, I would think.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. But I actually spend less than that when I'm at home.
You do, huh? Okay.
Yeah, well, I would. So, I don't need a lot of money to travel. It's a bit of a misnomer. People think they need a lot of money. It depends on how you travel.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about your Latin America trip. So, like, how did you start that?
Well, that was a beauty. I didn't know that I'd be able to have as much fun in countries abroad,
yeah,
like Asia, that I'd found in South America, and I found South America to be the wildest adventure of them all.
Wow.
Yeah, really amazing. And saved up my money and took off, and a rare aeroplane trip. I'm normally a big overland traveller, but I got myself over to California in the United States and did a 3-year overland journey. I think the only time I caught an aeroplane in all that time was to get to go across the world's largest island that's in a river system, and that was over the very end of the delta of the Amazon with your good self, Dan.
Yeah, that's right. I believe that's Ilha do Marajó. I'm probably mangling that pronunciation, but something like that. And yeah, I believe it's an island at the very mouth of the Amazon. And we flew from the north end to the south, from Macapá to Belém. And that island is a little bit larger than Switzerland. And it's just in the river. It's amazing how big the Amazon is. Yeah.
Wow, so that's big.
Yeah, so you started in LA and started going south through Mexico into Central America?
That's right. Started hitchhiking out of, I got down to LA, down to Mexico, and then started hitchhiking down the Baja Peninsula, world's longest peninsula in Mexico, and then over down to, from La Paz over onto the proper Mexico or mainland Pacific coast, and then pretty much a year with a surfboard through the bottom end of North America, through the Isthmus of Central America, and right down through the west coast of South America with the surfboard, and getting down about as far south as southern Peru, and then dumping the surfboard and then taking off into the Andes for a year.
Wow. So 1 year surfing. I mean, yeah, I knew you loved surfing. Didn't know you'd spent a year doing that. Were the waves good along the west coast? I mean, is the current a little different?
Well, there is
Australia.
You may well be referring to the Humboldt Current, but
Humboldt Current.
I was humbled at times by the Humboldt Current. Yeah, thank you. But yes, it does sweep along the coast. I've surfed in other countries before. I wasn't strictly surfing. I do a little bit of sightseeing in between. There's plenty of archaeological sites through Central America.
And for sure.
Yeah, and if I was actually to have a look, I probably would have spent no more than 2 or 3 days a week surfing and the rest of the time looking around. But that is the nature of surfing, and that you don't always have optimum conditions all the time. So
that's true.
As a traveling surfer, you'll find a lot of traveling surfers are really just doing a lot. They end up doing more traveling than surfing. But that's a great thing. Another really fun aspect to add to travel is to have a surfboard.
Cool. So yeah, it sounds like a lot of people do this. They just take off with a board, and that's kind of the theme of their trip. Surfing.
That's right.
Yeah, I've done a few trips with rock climbing where that's the theme, rock climbing. You try and get out every day, but at the end of the day, maybe you have a few hours to check out the sights, do a hike, or take a day off sometimes if your muscles get tired. And the thing with rock climbing is the rocks are always there, and as long as it's not raining, it's usually good to go. Surfing's a bit of a different story. You got to have a lot of things working out in your favor, I guess, to get good conditions. So it makes sense that you'd only get out a few days a week. Nothing wrong with that. And Central America, I'm sure, is awesome for surfing, the Pacific coast. So, but anyway, you took off to the bottom of Peru and then started getting into the Andes. I mean, they're right there. Might as well, right?
That's right, Dan. I've always been very involved in trekking. Trekking's been something I've been extremely passionate about all my life.
Yeah.
I think probably trekking and surfing would be the two. So they're wonderful pastimes to be able to incorporate into travels. And trekking is a very inexpensive way to see a country.
And so trekking, just for people who don't know, is where you walk for multiple days, carrying everything you need really in your backpack. You carry your food, your tent, any gear you might need depending on the weather, if it's cold, if it's warm. Water sometimes you have to carry a lot of, and there's different words for it. I hear trekking a lot. In the States we say backpacking. I think here you call it bushwalking sometimes. But trekking's a pretty common word to use. Anyway, so you're really into that, and right, super cheap. You usually don't need a permit, at least in undeveloped countries. You just go out and do it. And you buy your food, and you might need to pay a little money to get to the trailhead. And you walk to the end, and all you're spending money on really is food. So, and it's a great way to see the wilderness. So sounds great. Well, what's your favorite truck in South America?
Well, it was pretty comprehensive, Dan, and you know some of them I did with you, of course.
Yeah.
Well, Peru and Bolivia are standout countries, and in the southern section of South America, with what is known as Patagonia, they're all right. been wonderful experiences. But I really discern from one more than the other, one really stands out would be the what they call the Cordillera Waywash, and that's a mountain range in the top end of the Cordillera, the White Mountains in Peru. If you were to have a look at the top 20 treks in the world in a book and they've been categorized, you'll find that Cordillera Waywash is in there. And big mountains, high passes, traditional villages where there's no motor vehicles getting in there. So that's where you get that really real traditionalism. And great weather, blue skies, friendly people, and just awe-inspiring scenery all the time.
Wow. Yeah,
and it's about 10 days of it, so...
10 days. You have to carry 10 days of food.
Yeah, but you can incorporate it. There are a couple little villages that you'll pass through in the time. You can also manage to purchase a bit of, dried llama along the way, or a bit of lamb that the locals have got, or they might sell you some cheese that they've made from their animals.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, even that is just a fantastic way to get into the culture too. If there's people here and there, I mean, these are not like city folk living a modern life. These are their lives probably haven't changed in 500 years, right? I mean,
yeah, that's very true.
No electricity out there, right? And plumbing.
That's right. They're burning candles. They're living in stone huts with thatched roofs. They're burning, they're living on. They're burning. Their fuel is llama and alpaca manure. That's what they make their clothing from. They've even got some of them got homemade shoes. They're old school.
Wow. Yeah. And you can definitely see that by getting into these mountains. The Waywash. I never actually got there. I did some trekking in the Blanca, which is nearby, near Huaraz.
Yeah.
Beautiful area though.
Oh, yeah. Outrageous. I think one of the things I look for in the world is to go to, if I'm going to go to, you know, spectacular landscapes, you find yourself in a lot of really big mountains and remote areas where there isn't a lot of traditional culture. That's by nature, that's likely to occur. And so trekking gets you into places where you can't drive into. So you get a double whammy. You get incredible landscapes because that's where you're walking into.
Double good whammy then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're getting, you know, really traditional culture and where not a lot of tourists go to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a little shocking coming back to a town after doing a long trek, and then there's people with big cameras and shopping, and it's just a totally different lifestyle.
It's true, mate.
Yeah, yeah. And when you said high passes and the Waywash, what are we talking? How high? Like 5,000 meters?
Or? Yep, 5,000. I think
wow.
I think Cordillera Waywash. Now, there's another one down there that you can do. And I think that your average altitude is around 5,000. That's what you're walking.
Wow.
The Andes is very long, but it actually, you get down to, from the north, from Venezuela, you get down to Ecuador, and then from there the Andes becomes it kind of splits in two, and you've got an eastern and a western side with a huge plateau in the middle, which is what was known as the Altiplano.
Right.
And these, you know, this creates these high altitude ranges in these plateaus, and they're just very high for a lot of the time.
Yeah, and 5,000 would for Americans would be like about 17,000 feet, let's call it, right around there. So imagine a couple thousand feet higher than any mountain in the Rockies, in the lower 48 at least. It's up there, and you have to prepare for this. You have to acclimatize, and
yeah,
it takes a while, but it's definitely worthwhile to do. So and then one thing I learned was it was cool to do a lot of trekking in the central Andes, Peru and Bolivia mainly, in June, July, and August, because it's dry season, and that's not a good time probably to be in the very southern part of the continent because it's winter there. So it's the southern hemisphere. But then when the rains come in the center of the continent, then you can head south and you've got summer. So Patagonia must have been amazing for you too.
Yes, Dan. People often ask me, where would you live in the world if it wasn't in Australia?
Yeah.
And that may well be the other place. I think Patagonia is just the scale of the landscapes down there, and the force of nature with the ice and the huge rivers and the glacial activity. Both the ice caps, the northern and southern Patagonian ice caps, are really impressive.
Right.
When I think of adventure, and forest, and mountains and islands and it's such big landscapes down there. You only really get a small. It's hard to get into a lot of it. It's super remote.
Yeah, yeah. And Patagonia is it's not a really greatly defined region, but it's part of Argentina and Chile. And
that's right.
And they kind of, depending on who you ask, it might start at a different place, but everyone agrees it goes all the way to the bottom of the continent. And wow, yeah, some great landscapes there. And now the northern Patagonia, we could compare that in latitude to the northern United States, if you're wondering, probably 40 degrees, somewhere around there. And it goes south, I don't know exactly how far, but over 50, 55 maybe, south. So pretty far south. And when it's around the summer solstice, you maybe get 18 hours of daylight. I mean, something like that.
Yeah.
So you've got really long days and a lot of time to do great things.
That's right, Dan, you do. You get 18-hour days.
Right, yeah. Whereas when you're in the tropics, you get pretty much 12-hour days year-round. You go to bed a little early and a lot of darkness. But, yeah, that's another great advantage of Patagonia.
Generally traveling in very north or very southern latitudes is that you can you can get a lot of bang for your buck. You can pretty much have 2 days in one.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And when we met in, what was it, January 2006, and we were in Ushuaia, Argentina, which is the southernmost city in the world. There's a lot of tourists go there. It's a fairly big city, maybe 100,000 people there, but it's beautiful. It's right on the Beagle Channel, where Charles Darwin went through with Captain Robert Fitzroy on the HMS Beagle. That was a historic journey there that kind of the channel got named after it. And there's a lot of history there. And it's really a fantastic town, I think, to spend even a week in. There's a lot of great things there. But we met under pretty interesting circumstances, didn't we, with our friend John, mutual friend. He found us a great deal to go to Antarctica. And yeah, we took off and headed there on a cruise ship. I never expected to do that. I just thought it was going to be way too much money, but we did it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, Dan. It was I was hoping to get on a ship to do a once in a lifetime trip from Ushuaia, the southern city of South America, and the cheapest, most the best place to leave from. Never to do a trip of that length and to randomly be your roommate on that trip, Dan. That was
that's right.
Was a very good way to start a friendship. Yeah,
it was great. Yeah, that's right. We were roommates, or cabin mates, I guess.
Yeah,
and sure, we walked around Antarctica together, and that solidified our friendship right away, I think.
Yeah,
I kind of. Looking at penguins, yeah, that was great, and so that, well, I guess at that point you had been to what, Australia, obviously, that's one continent, Asia is two,
yes.
North America three,
yeah.
South America four, if you count them as separate,
yes.
Which not everyone does, then Antarctica five,
yeah,
yeah, that's so right. only two to go at that point. But you weren't there yet, were you?
Not.
you kept traveling through South America for quite a while, huh?
That's right, and I still haven't seen much of North America, even to this very day, Dan, which I'll be embarking on later on this year. So it's all part of the bigger mosaic.
God.
There's plenty of things out there to see of the world. In fact, I think I can say I've seen half the world.
Half the world.
Yeah.
I mean, just like summarizing all these places you've been takes an hour at least. It's amazing. It's really impressive. You don't just go to a country for a day and then you know, leave, or you don't just like dip your foot in and get out of there. I mean, you see places for real. How long would you spend well, I guess it's a hard question to answer, I know, because...
Oh, no, not really. It's not that hard to... And it's a good question. You look at a... Well, basically, I try to spend 3 years in a continent.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how many countries there are in it.
Okay, you know?
So I've just done a three-year trip on a bicycle, and the idea was to see the Middle East and Europe, and most of those countries are in Europe. So I didn't spend nearly as much time in European countries than I have in South America, for example.
Well, right, I guess, yeah. I guess you're not going to spend, like, 3 months in San Marino or something.
That's right, Dan. Like, I don't know. If I did that, I'd still be there.
Yeah. There's a lot of tiny countries in Europe, and the ones in South America tend to be comparatively huge.
Yep. Well, that was a road trip on a bike.
Go ahead.
So, in European countries are generally much smaller than, say, like I'm going to go and travel North America in the next, in my next trip. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really there's three countries in North America. Well, you've got Iceland and Greenland, which I did on my last trip as part of Europe. And, but the other three, you know, I'd probably have to spend a year in Canada. I'd spend a year in the USA. I'd spend maybe some months in Alaska, and the rest in like Hispaniola in the Caribbean, which I'm categorizing as part of my North American trip, because I have to categorize it somewhere, and I have done part of the Caribbean on my South American trip.
Oh, that's right.
And also in that time, I would also like to visit every nation in each of those areas. So I don't intend to miss any countries in those areas. So there's a lot of small ones in the Caribbean, for example. So I'm also trying to get to every country in the world.
That's another goal of yours, that is?
Yeah.
I've never actually asked you that. Yeah, you say you're bicycling, you've gotten into this cycle touring and done quite a bit with it, 3 years or so. But cycling through the Caribbean, how are you going to do that? These are islands.
Yes, it's true, Dan. There's about 12 or 15 Caribbean island nations. I've been to some, like along the South American coast and Central America, all of those ones. So it'll be a combination of hitchhiking on yachts, maybe a few flights. I don't really like to take flights, but I may well have to, time-wise. And also ferry boats. I'll get around to most of those, and I'll have a fold-up bike, which I can easily travel around the islands when I get there from one end to the other.
Oh, but right.
Just a bit of careful research and try not to double back. And if you do double back, having to go back there and over to that, if you don't research as well as you could, it's going to cost you time and money.
Okay, so you're in the research phase now, being in Australia.
Yeah.
To how to get through these countries.
That's right, Dan.
And you probably have to get some visas and a bit of that kind of stuff, bureaucracy.
Yeah, look, South America, where I've just been in the Middle East and Northern Africa, and also in Eastern Europe, and parts of, you know, North Korea recently, and Mongolia. There's definitely, you know, those are the countries. Like my last trip, there was a lot of visa chasing. This next trip, there'll be very little of it. No, very little visa chasing. As an Australian citizen in North America and the Caribbean, I really don't know of too many. I'll have to obtain those preordained ones. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's just another facet of travel. And nowadays, I always just see it as a challenge. I don't see it as a something that, you know, that is a waste of time or look at it negatively. That is part and parcel of being an experienced traveller, is to go and get your visas, get it done as quick as possible, and just get over it.
Yeah. See, I'm not really there yet. The regions I've seen so far, South America, you hardly need any visas, and the ones you do need, you can tend to just get them right at the border.
Well, that's right, Dan. I do recall you got a 9-year visa for Paraguay.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I think the official just saw my passport was still good for 9 years, and he just wrote in, it's good for 9 years, this visa. And normally they'd give you a visa for a month or something. And so when I got to the border to get into Paraguay, they did some pretty hardcore questioning of me, like, why do you want to come here for 9 years?
Bizarre.
Yeah. I guess I could still be living there today, even.
That's right. I mean, what have you been doing the last 10 years since I've seen you, Dan?
Yeah, living in Paraguay.
Yeah.
Some
of those old Nazis.
Let's not go there. But, yeah, Bahia Negra, maybe I'd be living in, some little village. Yeah, so my hardest one to get was China, and to get a visa to stay there for a whole year was complicated. But
yeah, well, you're also a resident there. So, well,
I currently am. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes it more complicated.
Certainly a lot of bureaucracy in a socialist country like China.
Yeah, there is, but actually, even the ones I've gotten recently for Cambodia and Vietnam were still a piece of cake.
Yeah,
I mean if you're scared of the visa thing,
most visas are like that. You just make an application, pay money, give some ID, and that's it.
Right.
China and some of those other ones is a bit more rigmarole. Russia, blah blah.
Yeah, you need to tell them where you're staying each night, and you have to be invited in. But most countries is pretty easy, though.
Yes.
And if you're American, there's a fantastic database out there that the government has put together. They'll tell you exactly what you need to do, and it's just search it online. It's real easy to find.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, back to traveling through. Well, let's see. You spent what, 3 years in South America? Then, of course, this 3 year theme.
That's right.
Or in Latin America, we should say.
Yeah.
Central America, South America. Came back here. And then you did your big trip through Europe, 3 more years. I mean, there are so many things we could talk about. This is crazy. This could just go on for hours and hours. But I guess suffice it to say, you think you've only seen half the world. That still blows me away. That's all you've seen. I mean, if you count all the places.
I mean, Siberia is huge.
Yeah, sure. That's hard to get through that.
I've been across Siberia, but just in one little thin line about 45 centimeters wide, which is my body. 50, 60 centimeters wide.
Okay, so if you're counting it like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's probably, I don't know how much, what percentage that is of the world, which I'm never really going to see a lot of it anyway.
Yeah,
I could say I've reasonably explored about half of it.
That always gets me when people do. They'll fill out like a map of the world and which countries have you been to or where have you been, and they'll put Russia, and then maybe they've been to Moscow, but then on the map it looks like half of the land mass is taken up.
Right. Oh yeah, it's like if you just flew into LA,
yeah,
and then you can fill in all the US and Alaska.
Yeah, the whole
thing. You flew into Toronto for a day. And then you also just spent one day in Vladivostok on the other side. You know, there's half the world there, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
In three towns.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make. Yeah.
So if you want to play that game, you can. And,
yeah.
And some people do that. I mean, you know, whatever. But you really get into the depth of places, though. I mean, you seem to know these places pretty well everywhere you've been.
Yeah, I'm passionate about it, Dan. And it's, you know, I don't just travel. Whilst I'm there, these are experiences that that'll live with me for the rest of my life. And I read a lot of books of places after I've been to them because they prick my interest, because I find it an interesting subject because I've been there, and history, for example. And also, a wonderful part of travel is not just the experience of being there, but also part of the research, and looking at your photographs and your writings and your painting or your sketchings or whatever you've done whilst you're there, and also keep maintaining friendships that you've had with those people whilst you've been in those countries.
Sure.
And as a traveller, you know, most of my friends are other travellers. So it's, you know, it's imprinting something on you that is, it's tangible in visually, mentally, in so many ways that you know, that these places that are sort of into your soul. And no matter how many places I've been to in my life, I still have affection for many places that I've been.
Sure sounds like it. I mean, one thing I did, just one minor example, is, well, we went to Antarctica together, and I started learning about Scott and Amundsen and their famous expedition, the race to the South Pole, and then I got into Shackleton and his journey on the Endurance, and I love that journey. I don't think anyone will ever top that.
And especially, we ended up at Elephant Island on that Antarctic trip.
That's
we?
Right. Yeah, yeah. We saw. We got a good look at the same island where he was marooned with all of his crew members, and he had to build up his little lifeboat and prepare to try to cross the Pacific or the Atlantic to get to South Georgia. I mean, it's just insane what he did.
Did it successfully.
And he was successful. That's even crazier.
And not only did he, when he actually miraculously got there. He had to climb across mountains
to
get to the Norwegian whaling station.
Right, mountains that had never been climbed before.
Yeah.
And this is after years of living on ice in Antarctica and having beards down to their waists or whatever. Just crazy. But I never even started learning about this stuff till after I had already gone there. So I really know what you're saying. But
yeah.
I think it really adds to the experience if you actually go there too.
And so I'm
excited to continue traveling because it'll give me a lot more stuff to study and people to read about and interesting things.
Yeah, what an education, the world.
Yeah, it's a great education, isn't it?
You
learn so much when you travel.
Yeah.
If you're listening and you're thinking about going somewhere, just do it.
That's right, Dan.
Yeah, just go. Next up, though, for you is North America.
Yes.
Wow. So another huge trip, and you dipped into Africa a bit on your last journey, right? So
yeah. Well, normally I'm fairly disciplined about where I go on my travels. That last trip was going to be just a quick look at a zoom around the Middle East, and then just a bike ride, one single trip across Europe to get down into Africa. And do a bicycle trip across Africa. But as it turned out, or possibly get a four-wheel drive and go through Africa. As it turned out, I just got stuck on the bike in Europe and just kept on going.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So although Europe's pretty cold in the winter, so I dipped down into the Mediterranean areas and some of those Mediterranean African countries.
Oh, okay.
The focus of that trip ended up being all 56 European countries. On the bicycle, I didn't go strictly on the bike, but most of them I did, and so it ended up being Europe instead of Africa. So yeah, I touched what they call the Maghreb, which is the North African countries.
Okay,
but a lot of it spent a lot of very tumultuous period in the Arab world, and that stretches across to North Africa in the last. Like 5 years, as we all know, so there were some logistical problems. But I got into those and had a taste of Africa, and I probably it's a bit of a toss-up at the moment, North America and Africa. These are the two continents that I have remaining to explore in the world.
Well, you've been to them all, just haven't thoroughly explored.
Yeah.
Yeah, been to all seven, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a toss-up, huh?
Which one to do first, but I'm going to do North America. I don't think it really matters too much, but I don't have that much more time. I'll probably, by the time I'm 60, I probably won't be as fit as I have been. Maybe I will be able to.
But well, you have a tremendous level of fitness. It's crazy how fast you can walk. I mean, your endurance, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, I guess that's another great reason to travel, right? At least the way you do it, cycling around Europe must have kept your legs strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I probably lost a bit of upper body strength from not surfing and kayaking, sea kayaking so much, but gained it in my legs, and also cardiovascular wise. Like 8 hours a day on a bike for 2.5 years was good exercise.
That'll do it. That'll do it for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, fitness wise, I don't feel any different than I've ever been.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It'll keep you young. That's for sure. Doing that much exercise.
Yeah. As you know, Dan, you're a very fit man.
Well, I wouldn't quite say that, but I try. Yeah, it's important to me, for sure. So, I guess you touched on your diary, and you mentioned some people might do, maybe they do blogging, or they have ways of recording their trips, and so you've always kept a diary, right?
Yeah, folding paper diary. It's true. Yeah,
paper.
Like a good old fashioned travel diary written in paper, like they have been for centuries.
Sure.
It's only in the last 10 years that diaries have been put up probably onto electronica, and because a lot of people have gone that way, it doesn't mean that necessarily I will, but I do record my trip electronically. I make posts on social media, and I can also keep photographs on using electronic means, and I've gone to digital photography as well.
Oh, you've converted.
Oh, well, yes, yeah, I have, Dan, and for good and for bad,
yeah.
I have. But I don't, I really love in the evening sitting down and writing like I always have, and I put my, often in fairly wild places, there's no access to all these electricity that you need, and just being able to open up a book and write it for 3 months and then send it home in the post. It's a methodology that I've been happy with ever since I started travelling, and I'll do it ever since and I intend to do it as far into the future as I can manage.
Well, that's great. I mean, the cool thing about seeing your diary, it's not just words. I mean, if it were just the words themselves, that might transfer pretty well to the internet or to a blog or an email list, even Facebook. But you do a lot of sketches. You paste the glue tickets in and ticket stubs in and brochures,
interviews, all manner of things. Dan, I collect maps, and I make maps, and I collect stamps from every country, and many, many different things like that. And I also like to make mosaics of all those little titbits and flotsam and jetsam that you find. If I find a box of matches on the side of the road, I'll rip off the packet of that, or keep old visas and lots of different things. I'm a traveller. That's what I do, and I like all my memories to be around me at all times. And the book, you know, a lot of people are putting their memories on and they're making what they call a blog. And I don't know, but to me, a blog is something that you put so other people can see it. I'm not specifically interested in people knowing, like lots and lots of people knowing about what I do. And a lot of people get great satisfaction from it. But it doesn't really interest me greatly. I travel for myself, not for really for prestige or for... for what other people may think. It's for myself. So very, very few people have ever seen my diaries. And
it's a good thing that we're doing this interview, because probably like 5 people listen to it. But don't really have to worry about you becoming too well known from this one. But but I've seen your diaries, and it's really impressive. If you want to keep those to yourself, that's your own business. And that's great, and you've always been willing to share stories with people, though, so that's good.
Yeah,
people are super interested in what you do.
I'm very happy to show people my diaries if they're around.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. And obviously that doesn't translate so well to this recorded audio medium, but but just trust me, they are great. I guess the next thing I was wondering, we do a lot of camping when we're together, and I like to go off and do that kind of stuff too, and I don't mind sleeping in dorms still. I'm 36. A lot of people, by the time they're my age, even they're over the dorm room thing. They want to get a nice hotel room and just move up in luxury a little bit, and they're not so concerned about saving every dollar. And to me, having a really nice room, it's not really a high priority. And I actually really like camping even better sometimes, because I have a lot of space to myself. But what do you think? Have you changed that, the comfort level of your travels as you've gotten older?
Oh, that's a good question, Dan. I like to travel to see landscapes. And so generally landscapes takes you to a place which is excellent for camping.
Because they're
quite remote.
Yeah.
And so camping is a really cheap way, and the best way, to really experiencing a country. And Australia is a classic. Australia is a nature experience ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
So camping, I cut my teeth on camping as a kid with my father and on the farm, and here we are on my family farm right here as we record this, and there's no better place to camp. And so you're always among the animals, you're always out in the, you're experiencing a country 24 hours a day if you're out camping. You know, if the wind is blowing and you've got to put up a tent and it's at night and it's cold, you're still feeling all the forces of nature. And I think that's just more a holistic experience than it is. You know, you could be, if you go into a backpacker hostel in a city, you're in a town, you're always being compelled to go into a town.
Yeah.
You travel for landscapes. There's not really, if you're camping, there's nothing really compelling you to get you into a town.
Right.
I love camping, and I always will, and I also do it a lot with my job as a tour leader on camping safaris. But it's cheap, it's the best way to travel. But when I go to a motel room, it's nice to have a nice motel room, but if it's going to cost me $100 a night, I'd rather stay in a cheap one where it might cost me 10 or 20. If I can find a dormitory, it's going to cost me $5, I'll sleep in that. as well. But an eye mask and earplugs can certainly make a big difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, dormitories are not a place you'll find all that often around the world. They're normally like separate or doubles and things like that.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's all sorts. There's rooms with 18 people in them, and there's people snoring and all that. And then there's rooms with four, and that's quite a lot more cozy, I would say.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm not going to change.
You're not changing at all. All right. Yeah, yeah. And what you mentioned, earplugs, eye mask, definitely those both help. Camping, you know, the sun comes up, and if you're not wearing an eye mask, you're awake right away. And maybe that's a good thing, but it certainly helps me sleep better. And the earplugs thing, because there are a lot of noises. And the third thing that I would say is at least for me, is a must, is a really good air mattress.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I sleep on my side. I have bony hips, and they will dig into the ground if I don't have a solid air mattress, a cushion between my hip and the ground, and I'll just get a terrible night's sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, right, Dan. And as you can see, there's a lot of facets to travel and a lot of ways to travel, and we all learn as experienced travelers what type of travel you like. But as the years go on and you attain more experience, that there is a certain, but there, you know, there's a type of way that you'll travel, and it can be a secret formula, and that's the value of experience.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I've learned too, that everyone has their own way of doing things, and there's no real right or wrong way to do it. You just go out and you got to figure that out for yourself. What do you like? What do you want to do? And even when it comes to stuff, people often ask me, should I take this on the trip or not? And I think the standard answer is no. It's like, should I take a laptop? No, it's too heavy, it's too big. Should I take a big camera? No, it's too bulky. Well, maybe you like those things. Maybe that's what you want to, maybe you'll use them every single day. And I travel with both of those. Even though I camp all the time, I still have a laptop with me. I still have an SLR camera. I have three lenses, and sure, it weighs a lot, but I don't care. I think it enhances my journey, and it's definitely not for everyone, but one thing I've learned, though, at least, is every country has a postal system, at least every country I've been to. If you start out carrying something...
Even North Korea does, Dan.
Is that right? Even
That's
North
right.
Korea, you can send stuff
That's
from there?
That's right, you can.
That'd be cool to mail a postcard from there anyway.
Yes.
I mailed a few from Antarctica, I remember. That was fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to what I was saying. There's a post office everywhere. So if you have something that's big and bulky and you don't like it and you're not using it, well, you could give it away if it's something cheap. But let's say it's a laptop. Send it home. Or,
that's right.
You know, you can always get rid of it if you don't like it. But if you start out a trip and you leave something important home, depending on where you're traveling, you might not be able to pick it up on the way if you're really needing this thing.
Yeah.
So I almost think it's better to start off with too much and just learn what you're using. And
yeah, well, it also makes a difference if you know where you're going and you understand climates and what you'll need. And a lot of that comes with experience, in that you'll know, for example, you know, I'm going to be doing a trip around the Caribbean, then I'm going to go to North America after that. So I'm only going to take things up for the first 3 or 4 months that I'll need to travel through tropical countries. So, you know, so I won't be taking, you know, big down sleeping bags and thermal woolen items and things like that, because it won't be necessary.
Right. So, but then it will be eventually. So how are you going to get them?
All right. Well, I'll just have my large bike posted over, or buy one and get all my panniers and my woolen clothes posted to me in due course.
Oh, okay, and you have a friend's house you can just post them to?
Yeah, and once I got my big backpack with my hardcore hiking boots and thermal sent from Australia on my first Asian trip, sent to a tiny little village way up in the Himalayan in India. And, and then when I walked in this tiny little post office, I could see a box sitting up on a cupboard, and I hadn't been home for a year.
Wow.
But my father had sent it out to me, and there they were, my Scarpa hiking boots and my big backpack and my petrol stove, the things that I really needed that I couldn't get there, but I didn't have to carry them for, I just carried it. All I had was a day pack through the first part of my trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so once you need the stuff, you can get it, you just sent it to the post office then, is that right?
From home, yeah.
Oh, you don't even need a friend's house to send it to?
No. Nah, okay. Post-restant.
Post-restant.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay. I've never tried this, but...
Oh, yeah.
No, so that's the way to go then. If you're traveling through multiple climates,
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to carry a lot of things that will work well no matter where I am, that have multiple uses.
Yes.
And thermals are thermal underwear, long underwear. They're a great way to they pack down really small, and
that's right.
You can wear them as pajamas at night. Yeah. You can wear them when it's cold out. There's a lot of things you can do with them. That's just one example.
Yeah. Well, they're good that you can wear them. Well, woolen are even better, but you can wear them as a, you know, as something warm if you're actually traveling in a tropical country, if you do need something but it's not very warm. But then when you get to the really cold country, you can wear them inside your sleeping bag or inside your jacket.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I'd probably travel with thermals for a while.
Right,
In any place.
Yeah, and I think a sleeping bag that goes to about 0 Celsius or 32, let's say, Fahrenheit, that'll get you through 90% of the world too, and it might be warm at times if you're in the tropics.
That's why I just get one that zips into a blanket, one that just zips completely open.
Open, yeah.
It zips down one side and one down the bottom, because then you can just lie on it or use it as a throw over.
Right, yeah, and then you can throw it over yourself as it gets cooler throughout the night, and then you're not too hot then. Yeah, that kind of gear works really well, and we could talk about gear for ages, I guess. But I guess the gist of it is, if you've never gone anywhere real big and you've never done a large trip and you're curious what to take, I think just take what you think you'll use almost daily and often, at least, other than a first aid kit maybe that you hope not to use, but everything else you want to use all the time. If you're not using it after a month, just, and you don't think you're going to use it, just send it home or give it away.
And, that's right.
And you try, it's just the kind of thing you have to jump into. I mean, it's like learning to swim. You just jump in, don't dip your foot in, and you'll figure things out for yourself as you go. And if you question these things and you don't know what you're doing, and that's fine not to know what you're doing. We all start somewhere. If you have no clue what you're doing, you have no clue what to bring. You just got to jump in and start, and everything will work itself out in the end. Nothing bad's going to happen. Don't worry about it. Just go do it. Well, Craig, we're running a little low on time. We should move on with our day. We might go pick some berries somewhere.
Great idea, Dan.
Yeah, we might go do that. We've been out looking for Aboriginal cave paintings. I've yet to find one.
It's all right. We scrambled over some spectacular rock formations.
Oh, that was great today.
Up here in the Mount Cole State Forest.
Mount Cole State Forest in southern Victoria, Australia. And yeah, tonight we're going to eat some kangaroo. I got to see Craig's cousin shoot one yesterday. Wow, he's a great hunter. And that, a great shot. And now today we get to use the have the fruits of his labor, I guess.
That's right. You reap what you sow, Dan.
There we go. So many great stories. And yeah, we'll do a storytelling session another time. But yeah, thanks for joining me, Craig. It's been really nice talking to you, and hopefully some of you guys out there who are listening, all two of you, whatever it is, will be influenced. We'll be inspired by this. Craig's a really inspirational character. Get out there and see the world.
Oh, great, man. It's great to have you here in Australia, and I hope that you had a great time being my guest.
I sure have. This is my sixth continent now, and just Africa to go. I'll get there someday. Okay, well, have a good day, everybody.
Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to the very first episode of the Around the World podcast. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. And from there, you can sign up to get updates to this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.